All right, so this is the final shear, the final radical responses to relevant realities. Or since this is not in the slot world of Balabhatim come to, maybe we could just call it the contemporary responses series. Hopefully this I'll continue researching more Shirim, and for all of you who are interested, you're more than welcome to go on to YU Torah if you like this stuff, and to hopefully download from there. Always happy to send source sheets. I was hoping to get something from Rav Hankin in here, but I got someone else who I think I would say is in the same league, Rav Nachum Rabinovich. And I really just wanted to get someone who's like a contemporary, Dati Lumi, modern Orthodox kind of personality. And I think he really fits the bill, and no better topic to talk about. I mean, I guess something that has Ishus related, and also talks about Minhagim. So two things that Modox people love to talk about. So the question we're going to be dealing with today is one that is halacha lemaisa for myself, but I think technically halacha lemaisa for anyone for the broader implications. On a very narrow level, the question we're going to deal with in the tshuva is if a woman needs to accept the minhagim, the customs of her husband when she gets married. But on a broader level, even outside the context of marriage, he addresses changing minhagim in general, even for a person who isn't married or has been married for a while, for the man, not just for the woman. So a few words about Rav Nachum Rabinovich. I think we've talked about it during some of the lunches. Rav Rabinovich is currently the Rosh HaYeshiva of Birkat Moshe. It's what people call Mali Adumim. It's located there. And he learned in Yeshivas Neri Sorol in Baltimore. He married one of Rav Ruderman's nieces. And if you look at the bio, again, it's always for your reading pleasure. We're not going to go through the whole thing. Just pointing out that in addition to learning in Neri Yisrael, he got a master's degree in mathematics from Johns Hopkins. I don't know if that's such a chiddush, because that's what old Neri Yisrael guys used to do, right? You get into the yeshiva, and the yeshiva has some deal worked out with Johns Hopkins, and then you get your degree through there while getting some of your credits through learning in the yeshiva. It's like almost like Yeshiva University, only you get the best of both worlds, right? I'm not going to make the joke, it's on recording, but you guys could assume what I mean. And then he also completed a PhD in philosophy at the University of Toronto. He's actually from Montreal originally, so I guess he was returning back to his Canadian roots. And furthermore, if you look at his career, he served as a pulpit rabbi for a little bit. He served in South Carolina, served in Toronto as well. He was in London, and he made his way over to Eretz Yisrael. He authored a few works. He authored Siach Nachum, which is a Shas and Shuvah that we're going to be looking at. He also authored Melumde Melchama, which was responsa literature that was geared specifically to Chayalim, to soldiers and Israeli military, dealing with questions that came up in military service. And then also I threw in over there, in addition to being that and also an expert on the Rambam, he also authored some works on probability and statistics and how it related to Talmud. I think that may have even been his dissertation. So we have a real Torah Mata figure over here. Now, I just want to get...
He also authored a son of
Perush Rambam. Yabshuta. Right, so he's an expert on the Rambam as well. For our purposes, we're not really going to delve into his expertise in Rambam, but we are definitely going to see his inclinations in Psak. So the question we're dealing with is as follows. Rav Nachum Rabinovich has two main tshuvas I'm aware of that deal with Minhagim. Tshuva number one that deals with Minhagim is just a general going through what is a Minhag, and specifically Minhag HaMakom. For instance, after Ger Sefarad, after the Spanish Inquisition, and that the Jews were expelled, do they take their minhagim along with them? Or better yet, in modern day, when the Jews left the shtetls in Europe, and then they came to America, they came to Israel, do they bring their minhagim along with them? Or do they reestablish new minhagim where they go? And there's all sorts of different kinds of minhagim that we may have heard of out there. We may have heard something called a minhag Yisrael. We may have heard something called minhag hamakom, just for a certain place. We may have even heard something called... Actually, no, let me hear. Has anyone ever heard of minhag hamishpacha? a custom that is specifically for your family.
Father, not mishpacha.
Okay, so you're suggesting that there are certain customs that are bound to the father. I think that's a proxy for saying that. Essentially, because the minhag of the family is usually determined by the father. But we'll challenge that assumption soon, hopefully. Do we? Would you guys take for granted that minhag hamishpacha is a concept that's well accepted? I just want to understand if I'm going to be breaking any assumptions here. Let's say your family, someone's parents keep 6 hours between meat and dairy, and you say, I'm going to keep that because that's what my mishpacha, that's what my family holds. Do any of us do? No?
Only insofar as it's a proxy for the father.
You're saying it's a proxy for the father. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm good. We're going to challenge even that assumption, because I could ask you, where does the father get it from?
His father.
And what made his father compelled to take on that custom? Did he just one day wake up? Or was there an external force that forced your father's father to take on certain customs? So we'll get to that. First, I'm going to do something different that we usually don't do. Usually we jump right into the tshuva. I want to actually, because the tshuva is such a radical departure from the norm, I want to actually look at some more traditional tshuvos first, traditional literature, to establish what the traditional baseline is for when it comes to minhagim. So actually, for those who are following along in the sheets that I sent out, go to section number 3. I think the numbers got a little messed up. It should be like source number 3, source number 4. It's a tshuva from the Tashbetz. The Tashbetz is the only Rishon we're looking at over here. And if you look at all of the modern literature, you look at Rav Henkin, you look at many others, they all point to the Tashbetz as like the source for telling us that women have to follow the minhag of their husband when they get married. So we're actually going to go through 5 reasons that I have found for why a woman follows her husband's minhag. Okay, so we're not gonna spend too long on it. Look at the Tashbetz in that source. Number 1 in the bold, he says, "Venas ish me'anche kihila achas isha me'anche kihila acheres ein safek sha isha hinechleles in baleha bechol chiyuvo." Why? Why does she have to follow all of his customs? De ishto kigufo. Did I say bechol chiyuvo? What did I say? Obligations, but what kind of obligations are we talking about here? So it's interesting to point out, Rav Rabinovich will actually point this out himself. There are 2 kinds of customs, and we could probably break it down from there also. There's a custom that, let's say, for Ein Bishul Acher Bishul, we hold like the Ramah is Ashkenazim. So we say that when it comes to liquids, if it didn't completely cool down, so then we still maintain Ein Bishul Acher Bishul. But we don't hold like the Shulchan Aruch that there's never Ein Bishul Acher Bishul for liquids. And we don't hold like the Rambam either that completely says we always have Ein Bishul Acher Bishul for liquids. So there you have 3 legitimate decisions in Halacha. All 3 are completely legitimized. Just the minhag tells us what we are accustomed to follow. Then there's a different kind of minhag, which is, It's not that there's a halacha, I have to do something, but the minhag is to take on an extra chumrah, an extra stringency. Can anyone think of an example of that? Can anyone think of an example where there's a minhag, not to choose one psak over the other, but a minhag to accept a stringency that halacha would otherwise not obligate us in? Yeah, Yitzi.
Eruv.
Can you explain?
Like some people are more mocking not to hold the Eruv, so...
That's not a good example.
So that might also be this different psukim over there. I think correct me if I'm wrong, would just be like kinyos, right? So there's no halachic position that said, no one says, me'ikar adin, you need to refrain from eating kinyos on Pesach. But it's a chumrah that was accepted and added on afterwards. So what he, I think, might be talking about over here, it's a good point when you say chiyuvo, it might be that he chooses to go according to one form of one opinion in Psak. But let's not get too caught up in that. It's a good point. The second reason he gives, and this is important, is a practical one. Udavar ze milsa de pshitahi, ve'em el savik shalihu anoshim suben al shulchan echad, chalukin besiosehen, hasur lezeh, mutter lezeh. So what's going to happen if the husband eats chalav stam? He's okay with Ramosha's heter. Obviously, Tash Bates is not talking about that. And the woman is Makpedes and Chalav Yisrael. And they sit down to a meal together. What's going to happen? Okay, well, chances are if it's a traditional household and the woman made the food, then he's just going to be very Makpedes and Chalav Yisrael now. But if you're in a household, which I'm likely going to have because Marissa wants me to do cooking as well, so then what happens if I eat Chalav Stam and she eats Chalav Yisrael? What do we do? So it's because of that very complication, the Tashbait says that you're going to have, maybe for communities is one thing, but for families that eat at the same table, you have to decide on a standard of kashrus, otherwise it's going to be crazy. So those are two reasons, ishoku gufo and a practical concern of maintaining the same standard of, let's just say, kashrus in the same house. But I think it goes beyond kashrus. That's merely one example. Moving on to the next source is from Moshe Feinstein. We're not going to spend much time on it, but what he says is, look in the bold in the middle paragraph. There's a concept in it's Paskin and Shulchan Aruch. It's pretty well accepted. There's something called Minhag HaMakom. When I live somewhere, I go by the customs and by the Minhagim of that place. When I move to a new place, and that new place has different Minhagim, and I plan to live there for good, I adopt the Minhagim of that new place that I move to. Right? Okay, that's Minhag 101. Ramosha extrapolates from this and says that when a woman moves in with her husband and they get married, he says, this is even, you know, when you move into a new community, let's say, you know, the committee that's sponsoring Nicola does a great job, and when we came in for the Shabbaton, they convinced us all to move into Long Beach, right, and we come here. So, you know, I mean, chances are we'd like to stay. We like the beachfront property. But on the other hand, there's always that chance that we might want to go back. So one could argue that maybe I'm thinking of going back to Bayswater era Kodesh because it's so beautiful over there. And so maybe I shouldn't accept the Minhagim of the Young Israel of Long Beach, right? Maybe I shouldn't have a 3.5 hour. Okay, never mind. too many jokes today. I know. I bash why. You already have bashed. Well, I should stop this. So Ramosha says when a woman gets married to her husband, Kol Shekein Beisha Shenises Shuba Maisa She'ein Biyado Lachzor. She can't go back unless her husband gives her a get. So she's like locked in over here. This is even better. This is more of a reason to make her adopt her husband's customs. So when she moves into her husband's house, it's like she moved into a new community, only even more so. She's not even able to go back by her own volition. So Ramosha's reason for why she adopts, it's not this concept that she adopts the minhag of her husband, but her minhag of her husband is viewed almost as minhag hamakom. And the same way you adopt the minhag hamakom of where you move to, you adopt the minhag hamakom of your husband. So that's the third reason we have. Reason number four is the halicho shlomo. So based on Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, the halicho shlomo says, in general, ala isha linho kibayla bein lahakil bein lahachmir. It is incumbent upon the woman to take on the customs of her husband. I realize I have to be very careful with what I say now because now we have women in the audience. But this is good. If I say anything like that strikes a chord, like just speak out. Tell me what you think. All right. Okay. Look in the footnote over here, and this might actually be the thing that strikes the chord, because on Sunday I was learning with Marissa, my fiance. She came over to Kula. We were learning together, and when we got to this source, she couldn't believe what she was reading. So look in the footnote Zion in Halicho Shlomo. Ula Rashai Habalahar Shosa Linho Kimanah Gebesavya. Her husband could give her rishus. He could give her permission to follow her husband's customs. Not that she can do it, but her father's customs. Thank you. That'd be awkward. Dekema shachiyav hu machmas sha'avoda lebala. Shibuda lebala. Thank you. Because she has an obligation of shiba to her husband. Oh, so interesting. You're saying that was shibuda, not sha'avoda. Okay. So what would you make of that? What would you make of meshubud? She's meshubud to her baal. But what's obligating? What's the category? What's the category over here? What's that mean that she's meshubba to her baal? That she has an obligation, or she has she's indebted to her baal? What do you make of this source over here?
That's I guess she's saying she has a certain obligation.
Right.
Towards her husband.
What's the nature of that obligation?
Oh, so that's what's fascinating about it, because
to follow, it's his, he's the Baal Bais. In other words, I think Yecheskel Brucker was here before. He made a cogent analogy to the Parshas Matos, in other words.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bechlal, that's what the Suin is Hachnasa Sa'isha LeBeis Baala. So she's entering his.
But that's
house.
More of a Rav Moshe kind of svar. Rav Moshe is more like she's coming into the Rishus. It's his makom. She adopts that. So you think it's similar to Rav Moshe.
Yeah.
So I'm reading it a little bit of a different way, and this is just going to be my take on it. But again, I don't want to dally on this too much. I understand there's room for interpretation. It sounds like there are certain, obviously, there are obligations the husband has to the wife. Ona is one of the famous ones. He has to provide clothing for her, has to provide different things. But she has obligations to her husband as well on a legalistic level. And one of these obligations that the footnotes on Lichos Shlomo is assuming is that she has an obligation to change her customs and conform to her husband's. And therefore, since it stems from an obligation to her husband could choose to be mochel on it and could choose to give her, Rishus, permission to follow her father's customs. So Shibud, that's reason number four. Fifth reason is Rav Eliyashiv, who's quoted in the footnote of Tefila Kilchasa. If you look in the first highlight over there, in the main section of Tefila Kilchasa, it says, "Olachar nisuehen," after a woman gets married, "Telachna achar nusacha minag balein." In general, the baseline assumption is that they go after, they follow the customs of their husbands. However, so now look, now what's the reason for that? Look in the footnote, footnote Dalet over there. He cites the Igros Moshe, he cites Smeches Yitzchak, etc. And then he says, Vechein Shamati. So I have to go all the way over here because I don't think it's written anywhere. This is Vechein Shamati. Magon Rav Yosef Shalom Eliyashiv, Shlita. So he was alive at the time that this was written. Shevadei min adin lavor l'nusach abal. Really, she should change over to her husband's nusach. Now he's talking about specifically tefillah. So let's say the husband davens Sfard and she davens Ashkenaz. She should switch over to nusach Sfard. However, I'm wondering if Rav Moshe would agree with that kind of case, because Rav Moshe points out in one of his tshuvos that Ashkenaz is more original than Nusach Sfard. Nusach Sfard took Ashkenaz and made some adaptations. So that would be an interesting case. I wonder what Rav Moshe would say. But at any rate, let's say Sfardi Ashkenazi. If she's a Sfardiya, she would have to change over to Ashkenaz to conform to her Ashkenazi husband. However, we're not really going to force her to switch her nusach, this Rav Eliyashiv talking, unless, and this is probably what he would hope for, Mikol Malkom, Tishtad Alav Rolusho B'Terem Yagiu B'Neha L'Gil Chinuch L'Tfila. However, there's a very practical concern. Intrinsically, she's not chayev. She's not chayeves to take on the customs of her husband, at least in the area of tefillah. Can anyone I'll just give you the reason, since we're short on time. The reason probably is that it doesn't affect him what she davens in her siddur until it does. When would that be? When their children reach the stage of education, the stage of chinuch. So she's expected to teach her children to daven according to the nusach of her husband. So at that point, Rav Eliyashiv says she should try to transition from her father's custom to her husband's custom of prayer for the practical concern, extrinsic concern, and necessity for teaching the children a nusach of their father. And obviously this goes with the assumption that the children are supposed to follow the nusach of their father. Which is not a surprise that, you know, it's not a surprise in general, and it's certainly not a surprise that Rav Eliyashiv would say that. So those are the five reasons we had. Okay, I'm not going to ask anyone to repeat them, but we see there's a lot of reasons given in literature. The point being is that they're just explaining a metzias. They're explaining facts on the ground. The facts on the ground are, and it's always been, that women generally conform to their husband's customs. That's not prescriptive, that's descriptive. That's how it's been. And the question is that Rav Rabinovich is going to address is that how it ought to be? All right, so we set the table there. Any questions before we delve into the tshuva? Any parts of Minhagim or something that I could clarify? Is the baseline clear? We're good? All right, wonderful. So go back, let's rewind back to almost the beginning. We're now going to look at Siach Nochem, Simon Pei Ches. Ha'im Ishat Srichel Kabos Minhagi Bala. Does a woman need to take on a Minhagim of her husband? If you look in the Shela section, so certain parts that are important I'll read inside. Other parts I'll try to summarize outside. It's not even a two-page shuva, so it shouldn't be so hard. So the question is, if a woman who gets married to a man from a different Edah, he's from a different ethnicity is a bad translation, but different community, thank you. Does she have to follow the customs of her husband? A few examples would be one in Hilchos Nida, and another would be in something like Tefillah. So that's his question. So at the beginning, he has a very, generally I don't like to quote when he just quotes other people, but this is great. He quotes the Meratz Chiyas, and this, knowing the Meratz Chiyas' profile, this is not so surprising that he would say something like this. He says there are two kinds of extremes when it comes to Minhagim. There are those, Ve'en Yodim Lahavchim Be Minhag Al Pi Din Torah Be Minhag Kal. There are those who don't know how to distinguish between a Minhag Al Pi Torah, a real bona fide Minhag, and those that just like somehow we caught along the way but that aren't so legitimized. Ul'daitim, according to those people, Hamahar Acher Minhag Shel Yisrael, Afil Minhag Shtus. Even if you follow after a Minhag that is foolish and has no basis, they think, Kil Maharher Acher Ashkina. It's as if you're running after the divine presence itself. They think even the smallest insignificant minhagim, they don't have any halachic basis. You want to know one that's good? I just texted Rav Ezra Schwartz like 2-3 days ago. He's a Rosh Yiv in YU, the Rav of Mount Sinai in Washington Heights, and he happens to be Masara Kedushin at the wedding coming up. So I asked him. So there's this whole thing that people wait a week without seeing their fiance before getting married. I said, we're going to be moving to our apartment. Practically doesn't work. Does it have any halachic basis? Should I be concerned for that? He said, it doesn't have halachic basis. The best that might be out there is some minhag Chabad. And then he texts me back like a minute later. He's like, and it might have Christian origins. So that's probably the kind of minhag that Meretz Chiyas is talking about where... if that's true, then I have to look into that if it has Christian origins. But if that's true, not only wouldn't it be something that you're obligated in, but then it actually might be chukas akum, and then you actually have an isser on your hands. And that's like the classic modern Orthodox svara, by the way. It's like, not only am I not going to keep the minhag, but it's chukas akum. You use chukas akum selectively when it's useful for you. You say, oh, it's a geish practice, so therefore I'm not allowed to follow it because it's an isser in the Torah to follow geish practices. That's another shir what that actually means. Is it strictly avodah zarah? Is it mean just even general practices? But it's like, I'm not going to do shlissel challah because it's chukas akum. Okay, now what about Valentine's Day or something else, or Thanksgiving? So, we're machmer when it suits us. Okay. I do it myself. I'm just speaking about myself. That's all. That's the other classic rabbi doing. I'm just talking to myself. That's it. I'm not talking about it. All right. Enough jokes. Back to the tshuva. So then there's other people. The other extreme. V'mashas sovrim ki gam in yanei Torah hakvum umukubalim gam heiman asum tachas mikra hazman told us. Then there are those who think that when we have a strong minhag, if the times change, we can sweep away minhagim. And that, too, is problematic on the other extreme, where even for legitimate minhagim, there are those who have no regard and think, okay, we got to modernize, we have to get with the times. So those are two extremes. Rav Rabinovich, despite, I guess for an Orthodox rabbi having a more liberal tendency, he believes very strongly in tradition, and he believes in making sure people keep to tradition. And he says that if there are certain minhagim out there that you know this person, they keep, let's say like that 1 week before marriage, like that means so much to them, like that's their Judaism. I don't know why that would be their Judaism, but you could think of a better minhag to replace that with. Then don't burst their bubble, because if that, ultimately, what are you accomplishing at the end of the day? If all you do is tell them that the minhag they held onto so strongly means nothing, then you're really just diminishing their attachment to Judaism and to God. Yitzi, what do you want to say?
Some people, it's Kanei Lachan Pesach. It's like Kaddish.
Yeah, or making sure when we talked about last week about OCD, like making sure like even the smallest crumb is eliminated. That's not true. It's not a shear. It's not an issue. Okay, but if that, actually that might be important to tell people because people shouldn't be stressing over that. Okay, so moving on in the tshuva. Right, so he says, "Lafikach ishi zarma od lo lezazel b'minhagim afilu minhagim shel ma bekach." ki laharbe anoshim zeu hakesher hayachidi sheish lahem im hamisores. Okay, that's what we just said.
You know, it's not like a real kesher to Yadus. Like...
So, you know, this is like, I think, what we're talking about during lunch, right? About like, you know, secular Zionism. If you have a connection to the Jewish nation somehow, maybe that'll bring you to, hopefully, a connection to the religion itself. So we don't want, if someone only has one connection to Judaism, and, you know, it's not the best connection, might not even be a religious connection, why would you want to destroy that one connection that they have? That's not going to help bring them closer. You're going to send them away further. You know, maybe once they have other connections to Judaism and they, you know, more legitimate practices, then it might be a time to, you know, put your hand around their shoulder, arm around their shoulder, and then tell them that the practice isn't necessarily legitimate. But that's more just a pastoral question, not a halachic question. Okay, but Aval Tzivur Shel Kibbutz Galios. Moving on, last paragraph on that page. V'chol Shekein B'ish V'ishto. So when it comes to people who are in communities in the diaspora, and certainly between a man and his wife, Imkol Echad Yakbid Al Minog Shelo Dafka. Ain't Lecha Gorin Pir Yosmer. If everyone's going to be so makbid on their one thing to make sure the other person doesn't do what they do, and like everyone should follow what they hold, it's just going to cause a lack of camaraderie. It'll cause a lack of achdus. Tell us, it's just going to lead to machlokis. And then what did you accomplish if you're starting to fight over individual minhagim? So on one hand, you shouldn't be mizalzel, you shouldn't humiliate people for minhagim they keep. On the other hand, you also have to adapt to the times when it's legitimate to do that, when it's valid.
I don't think also he's mizalzel minhagim. He's not saying to disparage the people, but not to disparage the customs themselves. Right?
Oh, okay.
The customs, the minhagim themselves have significance, but
you're saying the not just the people, the minhagim themselves.
Like, we don't just
okay. I'm wondering. So you're saying that he would be bothered that the minhagim inherently have standing that we shouldn't be disparaging.
Right.
Okay,
right.
That could be a reading of that. I hear that. Aval Tzivur Shel Kibbutz Galios. Oh, sorry, we just read that one. Moving on. So, Be'inyan HaMenhagim, Yesh LaHavchim BeMenhagim HaMiyusodim HaLacha O BePsika Shona BaLacha. So, I'm just going to summarize what we said before. There are Menhagim that come about based on their two, let's say there's two legitimate ways to go halachically. Our Menhag is just to follow one way. That's one form of Menhag. Another form of Menhag is taking on certain Chumras. So, he says like this. So when it comes to something, let's say nusach tefila, ein lebala kapos ala l'shanos its minhaga. The husband shouldn't be forcing her to switch her minhag. Shari mi ikar hadin yotzi mi dechova bechol hanusachim v'havdam b'neim ina ma'akvim. As he addressed in the tshuva prior, all the nusachim. In the end of the day, we could argue what's more traditional, what has better origins. In the end of the day, you're going to be yotze, you're chiyuvim, you fulfill your obligations with any nusach you have. You got to pick your fights here. V'abim minhagim sheyesh lehem hashlacha gam lebal yicholim shneim lahaskim al minog achid kafi sheyirz. Now here's a fascinating line. This is where the more I don't want to use the term liberal. It's orthodox stuff here. But this is where his more individual approach starts to appear. He says, when it comes to a minhag, not like tefillah, but something that would affect the husband as well, they could sit down, have a conversation, and decide which minhag they want to take. So what do you make of that? Vav minhagim sheishem hashlacha gam bal, for minhagim that have implications and ramifications on the husband, yichum sheim lahaska minhag achid, kafi sheyirtzu. They can decide on what minhag they want to follow based on what they choose. So he says, look, I think he's in line with the Tashbates so far as they need to decide on one thing. Because if they're going to, you know, let's say for standards of food, they have to decide if they're going to keep Chalav Yisrael or not. Otherwise, if he makes food that's not Chalav Yisrael and she wants to keep Chalav Yisrael, you got issues. But what's fascinating is it doesn't seem to be that you have to go according to the husband's custom. He says that probably they could pick one of her customs, or maybe even they could pick a new one altogether. Let's go further and see what he says. The next paragraph is just a quote from the Shulchan Aruch, and then not as important for our purposes. And the next paragraph is where the next, or just one line, he says, obviously, if the minhag is against the Torah, then we don't keep a minhag that's against the Torah. Okay, great. I guess that was just a disclaimer for someone who got that far into the tshuva. Maybe they developed that kind of thinking. Look at the next highlight. B'minhagim ha-novaim mipsika shona. Mishahu talmud chacham ha-yochol l'achriya bin achilukim yifso kifisha nirlo v'yanahi kach bebeso. So for someone who knows, so again, a minhag, that's just about, there's different positions, each position is valid, but you are, and you know the sugya, you know the topic. You can choose which minhag you want to follow. However, with a caveat, obviously, vimhu lo mesugal achriya, avishol rav mufak, yasa kifi horaso. If you don't know well enough to make a decision, you don't know the sugya well enough, consult your local Orthodox rabbi, or not your local Orthodox rabbi, actually. He says, go to your Rebbe Mufak. Go to whoever your Rebbe is, your rabbi that you consult on halakhic issues, and do as he advises. Next paragraph, he says that there are rabbis who are still machbid, and he acknowledges that the majority is not in line with what he's saying. But then he says in the next highlight, and this is where he ends off the tshuva, lefi ani esdaiti yish makom lahakel b'davar zeh, so he's going to say like this. In this generation, in this era, there's more reason to be lenient than ever before. We are living in a time where there's kibbutz galios. All he's talking about from the perspective of Eretz Yisrael. People are coming back together and establishing new communities. And they haven't yet fully solidified the minhag hamakom of these new places. Lafikach nitein lakvua minhagim echadash. Therefore, they should be. You're able to establish minhagim echadash. Now he says in another tshuva, I'll just point out, it's not on the tour sheet, that for something like a yeshuv, one of these insular communities, settlements, let's say in Israel, they should be developing minhag hamakom. They should choose what psak they follow inside their own community. But for many communities, and he addresses this to Tshuvas earlier in Simon Pei Vav, he says that many communities are just mixed together and there is no Minhag HaMakom yet. So since you're not bound by Minhag HaMakom, you can choose which Minhag you wish to follow. So that's the end of the Tshuva over here. Again, I think the most fascinating takeaway is that for the first category of Minhagim, where there's multiple legitimate positions and you know the Sugya well enough, you can choose which way you want to go. Now, I wonder what the threshold is. Is the threshold that, I went through, the Gemaras, I went through the Shulchan Aruch, I looked at the Mishnah Berurah, I took out Piskei Tshuvos, I looked at the deer shoe on the side, the side notes, and then I sold the Shitas and I decided which one I want to follow? Is that enough? Or is when he says that you have to be able to be Machria, or does that mean you have to be on still a higher level of erudition? You clearly don't have to be a posek from what he's saying. But I'm wondering what threshold he has. So what I want to do now is, we have 10 minutes left.
He's not talking about minhag, he's talking about really going machmir or mekel.
But that's a kind of minhag. For instance, like we said, for a bishul achar bishul. What if I want to follow Rambam Shita, and now even if the liquid cools down, I still hold a bishul achar bishul? That'd be crazy. Imagine what I could be cooking on Shabbos.
So that's just a psak. If you learn the sugi yourself and come out with a psak, it's a little different than a minhag, no?
So remember, there are two kinds of minhagim. There are minhagim that the community just the Ashkenazi community accepts the chumrah of kitnios. Then there are minhagim which are like this case. There are multiple legitimate positions, and you could choose which one. Yeah, Yisrael. Yeah, the minhag is right, but you're not. But I want to note, you're not developing a new psak. That's important. You need traditional, regular halachic chazal system. You need someone of high caliber to be mechadesh and to create a new psak, to create a new position. All right, that's why Ramosha Feinstein was big. That's why Ramosha Feinstein was able to tell us that we don't have to be concerned about Chav Yisrael because of the FDA, right? You need someone with broad shoulders like him. I can't say that. What I could say is, Ramosha said that, I'm going to rely on him. That's what's different. I don't want to get too much into Kalei Psak over here, even though I understand that it is related. There are some other things we're going to skip over here. I'm going to quickly run through it. If you look in the section entitled Qualifications Within the Traditional Approach, even though Rav Rabinovich is an outlier, even according to the traditional approach, that the woman takes on the man's customs, there are still limitations. There is flexibility even within the traditional approach. In B'nai Banim, Rav Hankin says, "Lahalacha mihu ein ledachos min haka'olam." The min haka'olam is that. So you know what he just did there? He says min haka'olam is that woman follow the husband's psak. So we shouldn't be docha that. However, when it comes to something that's what? Right, I have to go back to the tshuva because he might like just be saying mina ka'olam of like achronim is to follow that. I have to look back at that. But he says for matters that are not relevant to the husband, she could keep her own minhagim. That's one thing he points out. He quotes an entire paragraph from Or Torah, which Rav Avadi Yosef writes. I think it's some journal. I've seen it around before, but I couldn't locate it, so I just put in Rav Hankin's quotation from it. He says that even though the woman has to follow her husband's minhagim in all areas, if the husband takes on a chumrah for himself, right, in America where many people have chav stam, and he wants to take on chav Yisrael, he wants to not eat Hershey's anymore, he's only going to eat the cliques and all like the Jewish brands, she doesn't have to accept that as well. What she would have to accept, according to this, is her husband's amount of hours that he waits between meat and dairy. So even in this approach, if it doesn't affect the husband, some traditionalists will still allow the woman to keep her own customs. And Rabbi Jachter, in an article here that I found online, I think it appears in Gray Matter also, says that Rav Moshe Snow, a student of Rav Moshe Feinstein, told this author that although Rav Moshe adopted a strict approach to Chalav Yisrael issue, Rebetzin Feinstein did not. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, he gave the heter for Chalav Stam. He never actually kept it himself. And I think there are these stories where he accidentally consumed Chalav Stam and then he tried to get it out of his system. But his wife didn't accept that chumrah. She relied on her husband's psak. So then another exception is a Baal Tshuva. If a person comes back to religiosity, comes back to practicing Judaism, and his family wasn't practicing beforehand, and he doesn't have a minhag already, so then he could adopt his wife's minhagim. And what he says over here in Pnei Halacha, Shemivchinas Anagus Adas, Hu Mitztarif Ela, he's being Mitztarif, I think, to her minhag mishpacha. So it's a fascinating way of thinking about it. I think it fits well with Rav Moshe, who says that adopting minhag hamishpacha is all about changing your makom. So it's like he's, now that he's a Baal Tshuva, he's almost, you know, moving into the makom of her family and taking on their customs. If we go more through Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, the Halicha Shlomo approach, that's about her shiba to her husband, maybe it's him giving reshus to take on her chiyuvim. Yishal palpa, I don't want to get too much into it. And Rabbi Jachter says that that's actually a position of Rav Hankin as well in an unpublished tshuva. But this was written in 2001, so it might actually, maybe it's in Chelek Dalet by now. I don't know when Chelek Dalet was published. One last thing, we got 6 minutes left. If you look all the way at the end of the source sheet in the last section, you see an email and you see a bunch of WhatsApp messages. I know, very unconventional to see on a source sheet. This tshuva from Rav Rabinovich has such broad implications. Does that mean, you know, so my personal situation, and you're going to see in the email I asked, was getting married soon, God willing. My fiance keeps 3 hours between meat and dairy. I keep into the six. Could I, A, adopt her minhag? B, do I even need to adopt her minhag? Could we just choose our own minhag to go with? And I couldn't get through to Rav Rabinovich because, you know, he's in his 90s. Unfortunately, his health is deteriorating. And I'm not even sure if he has the presence of mind to still answer questions. But my friend, Elio Brani, he's learning, he went to Maya Dumim, and he just so happens to be there for 2 weeks right now during the summer learning, and he got me in touch with a Talmud Mufak of Rav Rabinovich. His name is Zach Malunchik. He said I could publish his messages on the source sheet itself with his name, so don't worry, I got permission before publishing it on here. If you want to take a look at the email, I had to minimize it. But you see over here, I cite the pertinent passages of the tshuva where he says that you could choose the psak for yourself and that the woman's not bound to the husband. And then I ask him some practical questions. I say, may one who has thoroughly learned basar v'chalav change his minhag from waiting 6 hours between meat and dairy to a more lenient position? May an Ashkenazi choose to no longer practice the prohibition of kitnios? If the above changes are valid, would he need to undergo hataras nedarim? And that, so those are some of the questions that I asked. And then I asked about my specific situation, as I just said. End of email. So then Zach, who got back to me, I don't want to go through all the WhatsApp messages here. I wish I had the best excerpts highlighted already. But he basically validated these positions. He says, in terms of kidney oat, in the second paragraph, I personally asked if one may change. And again, from a theoretical standpoint, there's not a problem with it. So that's theoretically. In the world of just halachic mechanics, one could change his minug and not accept kitnios anymore. But practically, the Rav is much more hesitant and would try to dissuade one from changing the minug. I personally asked him halach lemaisa, and he said it was okay to no longer practice kitnios as an Ashkenazi. But he also points out that he doesn't have such a strong family minug to begin with, and that may have been the reason. He also writes, he told me to do Hatarat Nedarim before I did ask and clarify that it's a Chumrah and not Ikar Adin. So I don't want to get so much into Bimadaik and the messages. There was another important part. He also said that there is more of a reason to be lenient when getting married. The Rav puts it, oh, but then he ends off with this. And this is something important. Basically, the not accepting kidney oats, the changing your minhug of between meat and dairy, at least on a theoretical level, and sometimes in practical cases, Rav Nachum Rabinovich was okay with it. What's important that I want to point out is there are people who get rid of minhugim, like the Maritzchias said, that want to just get rid of tradition. They want to update. They feel that the Torah is not with the times. And then there are those who, no, they have the highest reverence for Jewish tradition, but they understand also that Jewish tradition doesn't always obligate you in certain things that you think you're obligated in, and that it requires intellectual honesty. So Zach writes as follows. The Rav puts an important emphasis, and he says this multiple times, on tradition. Judaism is a religion of tradition, but from a legalistic and theoretical perspective, the binding minhagim are minhagei hamakom. Though there may also be different shikulim involved, if a change in minhag would insult your parents or even reflect badly on them, there's certainly an isser there, for instance. So number one, you have to consider what your parents would think. If you also say, sorry, mom and dad, I don't care about your minhagim. And then number two also is that Rav Rabinovich was very sensitive to tradition, and even though on a theoretical level he's totally okay, it seems, at least even from his Talmud Mufak, he didn't always want to paskin that way on a practical level, because he understands that once we, it's like a slippery slope kind of theory, that once we start letting you get rid of some minhagim, we lose the traditional feel of Judaism, and then many other minhagim, and I think what he's saying is then many legitimate minhagim will follow suit. So this is there's so much to do on this issue. This obviously wasn't a halach lemaisa class. I still need to get back to Rav Schwartz and ask him what I could do, lemaisa, see what he thinks about this tshuva from Rav Nachum Rabinovich. But what I want to point out here is that there are different shitos. It's not ironclad. For women who get married to someone, they might not want to take on their husband's customs, especially in my case where it would involve a chumrah for my fiance. So there is room here, and there are different shitos. And how are we knowing how to paskin? That's a great question. That's what the shiur was about. All right. Thank you all.